Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, everybody. It's really a pleasure to give this talk today. Thank you for coming, despite the beautiful weather. So I would like, please do not hesitate to interrupt me at convenience, on the fly, during the presentation. It's no problem. So what I would like to do first is to overview some of the basic motivation of focusing on charge transport in disordered graphene. Then in the second part, I will present you some efficient numerical approach to compute the Kubo-Greenwood conductivity that actually allow us to explore quantum transport in disordered form of graphenes of arbitrary complexity. I will focus then different type of defects and disorder from more academic to more realistic ones. I will try to discuss a bit the limit of Boltzmann approach. That is an issue that has been debated in this school. Also, I will discuss the crossover between weak anti-localization to weak localization and the onset of strong Anderson localization. And so I will show you some puzzling transport fingerprints in the case where disorder introduced some local ferromagnetic ordering. I think I have no time to show some result about band gap that can be induced by laser in the mid-infrared. So if you are interested by that, I can comment more privately. So let's come to the 2D, the clean case. Actually, I think that's okay. Everybody knows that the single out of a single graphene monolayer has been really a groundbreaking experiment. This is really clear. I think, however, that it was not so. It was quite a surprise that this graphene material will show some so spectacular transport property. And why? Why it is such? Because actually it's a two-dimensional material. So we could have expect that this situation, this material, will have been maximally invaded by the interaction with the surrounding. Okay? But you know the story. You know that actually graphene has shown very high mobility, even though it was deposited on the silicon oxide substrate, and even though there was some device variability at first. But then the mobility has been raised. And isolating the graphene, we could have reached very high mobility. So the fact that these transport properties are very spectacular, remarkable, is mainly due to, as you know, the intrinsic electronic feature. Okay? The fact that we have a Dirac cone physics, we have linearly dispersing bands, also because we have an additional symmetry in the problem due to the sublattice degeneracy, this additional quantum degree of freedom named pseudo spin. And at the level of single scattering events, Katz-Nelson, Novoselov, and Game just demonstrate that this clean tunneling mechanism could be activated in certain circumstances. Okay? So the fact that there is a possibility to have a completely reflectionless tunneling through a potential barrier of arbitrary depth and width was a big surprise. And it's one of the features that explain why you have so good transport property in the system. However, in the graphene deposit on a substrate, you will not have just one scatter. You will have many of those. And what we expect when we have many scatters and we go to the low temperature regime is that we have an additional phenomena. We have an accumulation of quantum interference which drive the system to a weak localization regime and to a strong localization regime eventually. I mean, this is a pioneer. This theory has been pioneered by Schuler and Aronoff. And actually, this quantum correction can be seen as just a correction of the semi-classical result. It is due to interference. Interference between different paths that have a time reversal symmetry and that it come back to some origin at some point in time. Actually, if you look at this formula, it's quite comprehensive way to estimate the magnitude of this quantum correction. Here we have a dimension factor, but here we have an integral which is cut off by two time scale because you have to count all these loops which are limited by the elastic mean-free path because you need to enter into a diffuser regime and the coherence lengths because interference survive as long as the system remain quantum coherent. So this is the cutoff, and this term is actually the integral of all the probability of return to an origin. So which all the contribution of all these paths. So to unveil this phenomena by using a magnetic field, you can tune a bit the phase, and then you have this negative magneto resistance or positive magneto conductance that was observed. And so this theory has been well checked and validated in many of materials. But what we know also is that if we have additional degree of freedom, and we have an additional Bewis phase, such as the magnetic field, we can have actually some sign reversal of this contribution. And this is known as a weak anti-localization, which is a kind of onset of robustness of the metallic state. So the original prediction of this effect was traced back in the 1980s by Ikami, Larkin, and Nagaoka. Actually, they show, and this is pictured in a simple way here, that if you have the spin, which enter into play because, for instance, there is weak spin-orbit coupling in the system, and the spin start to rotate, then you have to take into account also the interference between this additional phase factor that are driven by the spin degree of freedom. So in this correction, you have an additional phase interference. And to see what's going on, what you have to look is all the spin rotate adiabatically when you are along this trajectory. And you will see easily, actually, that for one of the loop, the clockwise, you will get pi factor. For the counterclockwise, you will get an opposite sign. And so this interference term, actually, the total phase difference between these two trajectory will be 2 pi, and this will change the sign of this phase interference. Change the sign of this phase interference, it changes the sign of the correction, quantum correction to the localization, then the conductivity is increased. Okay, this was a theoretical prediction, and then in these thin magnetic films, absence of magnetic spin orbit coupling was a weak localization, and then by putting some magnetic impurities, they could tune the weak localization, turn it to a weak anti-localization. So theory was completely demonstrated in conventional disorder material. So the surprise was that, okay, in graphene, without any intentional magnetic doping, similar weak anti-localization regime was shown, was first theoretically predicted and then confirmed experimentally. This is the experiment. And this, in this case, which is just a pseudospin that plays a role of the spin, because pseudospin has an additional, drives an additional Bewis phase, and this Bewis phase also interferes in the same way, and so leads to a sign reversal of the quantum correction. Actually, the theory was first initiated by Ando and Suzura, and then a really consolidated framework was developed by my
co-workers. Excuse me. Okay, what were the 1, 2, 3 and the +4? The different curves. What was Q?
Just 1, 2, 3, it's a different position of the Fermi level. This is a very important point, actually, because when you drive the system closer to the Dirac points, you have the crossover are shifted. There are some effects that are complicated and still not completely fully understood. So by Kane and co-workers, what they could do is actually they could generalize this diagrammatic approach of the Coupe-Perron, the so-called Coupe-Perron, and then they could classify the disorder in function of what kind of symmetry they break. And they could generalize this weak localization theory. And so at the end, they make a prediction about the magneto resistance as a function of typical time scale or length scale. The point is that here, for instance, they introduce several elastic scattering time, which are related to some intra-valley. So they make a generalized kind of universal theory, but all these parameters are phenomenological in a way. They're very difficult to predict and to relate to compute in a realistic situation. Okay. So now let's go to what is really dirty graphene. We are interested in the graphene for application, and this is what graphene is in the current application. It's not in the market, but what people are using at the moment to develop this mobile phone, flexible mobile phone, and so forth. So it's very far from the clean two-dimensional material. It's just a polycrystalline graphene, which is due to the way you grow these materials, the way you transfer these materials to another substrate. It's plenty of disorder.
It's a world of disorder. Yeah. Can I just ask you one question? We go back to the theory by.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what does it mean? So this is the crossover between weak localization and weak anti-localization. So the different parameters that come in that are partly phenomenal, phenomenological.
Yeah.
So if you have intervalley scattering, it destroys at the same time weak localization, weak anti-localization. How do I need to?
Okay, I will illustrate very clearly on a well-defined disorder model, and the thing will be clarified. Here it's a kind of all the contribution there, so you have a possibility depending on the sign, depending on the strength of this function, of the gamma function, you will have one dominate over the other one, and you have a minus sign or plus sign. Okay, so indeed, there are some issues about the typical value of this elastic, additional elastic scattering time that will define a class of diagram in the intra-valley or inter-valley or mixed or trigonal warping effect. So there are several types of diagram classes that are classified. But I will illustrate this very clearly afterwards.
So, you will so it's not so easy that you can just say intervalley scattering just kills everything?
Actually, yes. From our numerical simulation, it is very clear. From this set of phenomenological parameters, it's difficult for us to answer because there are somehow some recurrence. They are connected. They are not independent. So it's difficult. But for more simulation, you will see very clearly that when you have intervalley scattering dominating, you have weak anti-localization that predominates. And if intervalley scattering is coming to play, weak localization comes out.
So you answered this. There is a simple answer.
Yeah, this is one.
Last sentence was a simple answer.
Yeah, sorry.
Scattering wants to favor weak localization. Yeah. We have weak anti-localization, which is a predominant
intra-valley. Yeah. Okay, so I was saying about...
In the same regime.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, there is an addition to the fact that this type of disorder is really an issue for bringing graphene to the market. Okay, this is really an issue to understand what is the limit of the mobility of the transport in such time of polycrystalline graphene. As you know, people have tried to design new type of graphene chemical derivatives, and the Manchester group initiated that with trying to graft hydrogen atoms, and to make they wanted to make some kind of insulator to make a graphene, they call. Indeed, they could observe that the resistivity could be tuned quite substantially by using this hydrogen that will create some sp-free bonding on top of the graphene surface. And in this is an experiment also which is very nice because they follow with the ARPES the fact that they're clean graphene and then they deposit on a control, more or less controlled way, and they just monitor the hydrogen density, and they see how the electronic bond structure is affected when you start to make this more amorphous. And they argue about some Anderson localization, but they had no complete, comprehensive, and conclusive transport experiment to do that. Anyway, this is an experiment that was done in Barcelona in the group of Adrian Bartol by Joel Moser. And actually, that's very interesting because they found a way to clean graphene first. They found a way by using high current density, current cleaning. But then they still see in AFM some kind of dust. And then they say, well, we have to try to other things. One of the things they thought about was to use a very weak, smooth treatment with an ozone flux. And they say we will get rid of the additional dust. The point is that indeed the picture, AFM picture, was looking more clean. But when they look at the Raman, this was what they had before, and this was what they get afterwards. So this peak, which is D-bound, is not good news because this peak is evidencing some local disruption of sp2 order. And actually, there is a very recent paper just published a week ago where they control the deposition of monoatomic oxygen. And they study with AFM. And they see that all this monoatomic oxygen start to distribute in a random way on the surface. So actually, what is very stable, and this will decompose at the oxygen, dioxygen plus monoatomic oxygen, and dioxygen, which is fissile solvent, has no impact on transport. But what is important is the fact that monoatomic oxygen finds a very stable configuration bridging two carbon atoms that slightly displaced one respect to another. And this is a very strong bonding. And actually, when they make the transport, before the cleaning with ozone, they get something which was temperature, almost temperature dependent in the region of the Dirac point, which is very important. And then when they try to clean and they get this all this dust here, not maybe as much that this coverage, but low coverage, then they get this result first at 100K, and then by decreasing the temperature, they make this conductivity decrease and decrease and decreasing. So these type of defects are quite invasive for transport. Okay, they made a quite clean transport measurements. They look in the low temperature regime, this is important, because if you want to speak about localization lengths and variable entropy, you cannot do that at more than 100K, or even 100K is already high. So they make this very carefully as a function of gate voltage, and they actually find that this conductivity can be well described by the variable entropy. From this variable entropy, you can extract a localization length. So what they show here, and at the same time they look in the region of space where the magneto resistance fingerprint could be fitted by the weak localization theory, then they could extract a temperature dependence of the coherence length, which is very important. They observe that when I finish it, then you answer. They observe that when they get closer to the Dirac point and look at the magneto resistance, it is completely impossible to make a fit with weak localization. It is not possible. So for these materials with this type of defect, depending on the gate voltage, you either are in a weak localization regime, or if you get closer to the Dirac point, you are in a strong localization regime. Okay, please.
So that's variable range hopping without screening, right?
Without?
Screening. Because with screening it would be about half.
Yeah. Doesn't really matter. You mean what? The formula here?
The exponential
here. This is what I think that they can fit with both. And then we change this is a length scale. This is not really the problem is okay, we don't really know what's going on there, okay? So you have to make an assumption and then you proceed. Okay, so
it's usual, it's difficult to distinguish between these exponents if you don't make too many decades, it goes, I mean, exponentially,
but it's
just one order of magnitude. It's very often they feed and then they get exponent, which is in between or something like this.
So what interesting point so is that actually you can also make the Drude, I mean, there is an universal relationship between elastic mean free paths and localization lengths, which is driven by the scaling theory of localization. So actually here, for instance, they show these lengths as a function of gate voltage using their Drude value and their mean free path value, okay? So both things more or less quite reasonable agreement. Now, in addition to that, disorder, the chemistry can be used as a tool to engineer new properties. And I just have one slide and then I'm going to the real point of my talk. So this has been, also, again, in Manchester and people in Germany, they detach reversibly some molecules, hydroxide group, and then they switch on and off the current by decades. Making a gap in the system, doping the system, making this graphene nanomesh with some holes, then you can maybe create some local room temperature ferromagnetic. So disorder is not just an issue in terms of localization effect, which is very nice, but it's also an issue in terms of shaping new property of the materials. So we need also to understand for all these cases of specific disorder, what will be the consequence on transport length. So our approach is really try to catch to describe in a most realistic way what's going on at the local level, at the level of defects, because defects change chemical reactivity and things like that. And the usual simple type bending model, they are very far away from what's going on at this scale and in the realistic level. The point is that if we want to investigate quantum transport, we need to study large-scale systems. And 1 micron square means 10 millions of carbon atoms. So a system with 10 millions of carbon atoms with a description that would be more with first principle is something very challenging, right? But there is no way out. If you want to do that, if you want to get some quantitative understanding of experiments, you have just two things to do. First, you have to use first principle. If you don't use first principle, you can classify this other class, but you will not be able to give an answer for a given type of disorder. In addition to that, you have to make a bridge, because first principle Hamiltonian are very complex, many, many orbitals. This is not tractable if you want to compute transport. So you need to fake this bridge and to simplify and get, let's say, the sophisticated level of type Manning modeling that will, let's say, encode the main information, which will be described property correctly close to Fermi level, close to Dirac point. And finally, you need a transport method that is performant. So if you want to simulate millions and millions of atoms in a disorder system, you need to find ways to deal with this problem. And this is actually what we have been developing for many years and works quite well. So before I show just one slide of the methods, just Kubo formula in some simple words, for just to remind you. Imagine I have the system, which is my system, my Hamiltonian, starting Hamiltonian with my potential, describing the system, and then I have a given spectrum. Then what is a Kubo-Greenwood? What is a linear response approach? Is you say, okay, I'm switching on a weak electric field, and this electric field would just induce perturbation in my system, okay? So I can write this out, this electric field enters in, and then I get this perturbation term. And then there is a perturbation, so it will induce transition between my initial state. So I can compute a transition rate, kind of Fermi-Gödel rule, and just summing up all the transition that will be driven by some emission loss or absorption gain, or energy gain, energy loss or energy gain, depending on you absorb or you emit energy quantum, exchange with the electromagnetic field. So when you do that, and when you compute the total absorbed power by this system, taking into account all the possible transition, and you account also for the statistics, then you get these terms for the total power, and the total power is related to the real part of the frequency-dependent conductivity in that way. And then by manipulating a bit, you can write a general form in terms of operator, and basically the main information is this trace of this velocity delta. Delta is a spectral measure. The trace of this operator is the total density of states, and this is just a correlation function between currents, as you may say. Okay? So this traced back with Kubo. So what we actually did is, first we can rewrite this in an exact way in these terms, which looks like the Einstein formula. So we have this density of state at this given energy, and then we have to find an asymptotic regime of this derivative of this operator, this average, which is written here, which is telling you about the spreading dynamics of the wave packets, and its form is actually given in this way, by introducing the evolution operator and the position operator. Okay, but actually, to compute this trace, we can find a very efficient real-space algorithm. Instead of computing the trace, because trace, we should diagonalize the system, we don't want to diagonalize these millions of atom system. We found that just computing this ratio, we get extremely precise results. This ratio, which is this ratio here, so this is a trace of the delta, we just compute one diagonal terms of delta average in between these random phase states. So these random phase states are extending the whole system. So there is no energy, I mean, we have component everywhere in the spectrum. And when we do that, we can, using the, instead of diagonizing or inverting any matrix, we just construct a basis, an orthogonal basis, starting from these random phase states. It's named the Langsdorff process. And then at the end of the day, this element is just a continued fraction, which is just by having tridiagonalizing the Hamiltonian, we get all the coefficient, and then we get these elements. The X operator?
Yes.
X operator is a position operator. Yes, just a position operator. Yeah. So this other one here, because there is a time dependence, it looks, it's computed exactly the same way. It's a diagonal element, but here this wave function is time dependent, so we have to compute every time step. We split the time in some time step. And this vector is actually related to the initial vector, but then we have extended somehow the evolution operator in a basis of orthogonal polynomial. So Chebyshev, because they are very stable and very well known and things like that. So actually here, by doing that, we can really outperform any kind of other alternative methods. We do not diagonalize, do not reveal any matrix, no Green function. This is Green function, but this is done very efficiently numerically. Okay. Actually, this is an example. There is a wave packet propagating in space. You will see some defect, and so you start to have a lot of messy interference effect, things like that. So in this, in the methods, we take into account all possible interference effects. And the conductivity, we can give a scaling analysis. We can make a scaling analysis of the conductivity since we have a time dependence of the evolution of the wave packet. And actually, our state of the art today, this is the usual method that people use, the N3, the scale N3 with respect to the number of atoms in terms of computational time. We scale linearly, and we can simulate up to, at the moment, we have simulated 10 million atoms graphing, disorder graphing. Right, let me show you some illustration. Basically, I will just start by showing you the two cases which answer your questions about can I tune a bit the contribution of intra-valley versus inter-valley scattering. This is a really important issue because it is known that all we take place, the main impact on transport will be related to their relative contribution. Yes?
Regarding your method, can you treat specific geometries like the non-equilibrium Green function methods, or does it have to be like real systems?
Any kind. The only limitation is that Kubo is not appropriate when you have contact sitting in and when the system is ballistic, because then all the conductance, all the dissipation takes place in the contact. So this Kubo is good when conductance, when dissipation is driven by intrinsic source of disorder. This is the only limit. Okay, so that Landauer is completely unavoidable when you have contact and a quasi-ballistic regime.
And also, which is this first principle at some sense?
I will illustrate. Okay, so long-range potential. What does it mean? Long-range potential like this ripple. Long-range potential in real space, short-range in k-space. So you are just allowed to do something over there. Short-range in real space, long-range in the k-space. So you are allowed to connect valley mixing. This is very important, and Sasha will probably give the rigorous theory about that. So let me take further case where I'm breaking all symmetries. That's a simple case. And that is so important because the Anderson model is a kind of generic model. So what do we do with Anderson model? We just take every on-site energy is allowed to fluctuate in a given interval with a uniform probability. So by tuning omega, I tune the disorder strength. Mm-hmm. So this is the result, for instance, for this value of omega and unit of gamma zero, and the result on the density of state. Of course, you increase omega, you just, first things, you disappear, this final singularity disappear, you are breaking the crystallinity of your system. And then you have a continuous decay of this density of state. But what you get here at zero, at the Dirac point, you have somehow a transition at some point, and the density of states becomes finite. There is no Fermi level shift, and this numerics is in full agreement with some self-consistent Born approximation calculation made by Ando long ago. Now, what tells the self-consistent Born approximation, which is the approximation which is the most rigorous, where you get rid of quantum interference effect, but you keep into account multiple scattering effect. So which means that the conductivity is just like you just make this product of average of the average of a disorder of the two Green function, two particle Green function. Actually, Ando, again in the same paper, he showed that in graphene with this type of disorder, you can get an analytical form for this sigma function. Okay, this sigma function is given by this. So you have self energy. You have to compute this self consistently. What is a very curious feature is that exactly at the Dirac point, there is a kind this universal value. This value is always 4 a squared, e squared over pi h for this level of approximation. It's not an observable, it's just something that is well controlled, but it's an approximation. So they got this value. So actually, for...
It's supposed to be short range scatters, right?
Yeah, short range scatter. Okay. So here this is what we do with our simulation. We have this wave packet propagating, we have this diffusion as a function of time, it will normalize with the maximum diffusion, and we are at a direct point. And depending on the value of the disorder, we get stronger and stronger. When we have first a ballistic propagation, then a saturation, and then a decay. So this is a typical behavior we get of wave packet propagating the disorder system. But depending on the value, you have the effect of localization, which are unveiled in this strong decay of the diffusion coefficient are appearing at shorter time. Okay, but anyway, from the maximum of the diffusion coefficient, we can extract this semi-classical result. The result where there will be no contribution of quantum interference. So we can give a number about that, about the mean free pass, about the semi-classical conductivity, and about the mobility. And when we get, when we make this calculation, this Anderson with this all, we get this result, okay? For the semi-classical, this is 2, this is 4 squared over pi. So at direct point, plaf, plaf, we are exactly reproducing that. And the behavior is quite similar. We made a simulation of, the, of this form, and it is okay, close enough to the direct point. So I mean that the form, the methodology here is fully validated, and it reproduces something that has been analytically derived. We can look at the mobility, and by by tuning this omega, tune the mean free pass, we tune the mobility. So somehow this omega give a measure about what would be the equivalent omega for a given behavior of the mobility figure. For instance, we can have some mapping by looking at the experiments. It's not really interesting because this disorder is quite unrealistic. Right? 2.5 multiplied by 3, so we have many EVs, and we can have fluctuation nearest neighbors by 10 EVs or something like that. This is completely realistic. But anyway, it gives us a guiding direction. It is also interesting to have the typical number in terms of localization lengths. As I told, this diffusion coefficient actually allows us to study the scaling behavior of the conductance. We found that it's first logarithmic, and then we know that there will be a transition to the localization state, so localization lengths can be derived just once we know the mean free pass. Okay, and this is a typical localization length function of energy, and we see that indeed to get something like in the order of 10 nanometers at the Dirac point, we need to have 7 electron volts of omega, which is just quite large. So it means that the system, even in this situation where we are breaking everything, is very robust anyway. Or this is maybe two-dimensional physics and two-dimensional localization. So now comes to the fact that we would like to go to some more realistic disorder. And we would like to understand, in particular, how can it be possible to see the effect of the relative contribution of intravalley versus intervalley, because in the previous case, everything is massively dominated by intervalley scaling. So the model of use is this long-range potential, this Gaussian potential. Okay, here we have a given number of impurities, and then we have a depth of the on-site impurity, and then we have a tail. It has been studied by many people. What do we get? Let's assume first that the depth of all the impurity is large. And I will take this 2 in this unit of gamma 0. It's large. So we get this localization effect, okay, in absence of field. Now I'm switching on the magnetic field. What do I get? I'm switching on the magnetic field. I'm continuously suppressing all the interference effect, okay? And then at this 0.2 Tesla, I'm almost continuous here, which means that it means kind of no more interference effects are there. They have been suppressed by weak localization. So we can estimate the mean free pass. We know the size of the system, so we are really in the weak localization regime. And if we look at the magnetoconductance versus field, we get this positive magnetoconductance. So it completely agrees with what is expected in a situation where you have actually a strong contribution of intervalley scattering. And here we tune a bit depending on the position of the energy, direct point of higher energy, but there is nothing really different. Now what we'd like to do is to decrease this value. And actually we benefit from this study. For the same model, they show, and this is the value we solve scattering amplitudes as a function of omega. It's exactly the same model, okay? And then they show that as long as omega is smaller than 1, which is meaningful because you do not, if you want to break AB, you must actually overcome this gamma 0. So as long as it's smaller, you don't have any intervalley scattering, just have intravalley scattering that takes enter into play. And then by increasing that, you have a transition, and then you have a saturation. Okay. So omega is really tuning the transition, the strengths of intra-valley versus inter-valley scattering. And this is, actually we start to see something strange here, because this is zero field, then we cinch on the field, we suppress weak weak localization, but then this goes down at omega 1.5. And then if omega is equal to 1, which is the typical scale where we should have suppressed inter-valley scattering, then we get something very strange, because even at our large time, this is really long, picosecond, we have something that does not completely saturate. It tends to saturate, but it does not completely saturate. Maybe because the mean free path is so long and our system size is not about to resolve that. But for all the energy, it does not saturate. And the system looks like being in a quasi-ballistic regime for omega equal 1. Now, if we look at the conductance of every of all these cases, in the case of omega equal 2, there was just weak localization.
This is what we should expect, right?
Yeah.
For purely in traveling scattering, that's what we
need. Yes, so exactly.
You say, or you will come back to this, because you said your presence is not a contradiction to what they.
No, no.
So this is a regime where the scattering is predominantly in traveling, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. There is no, fortunately, there is no disagreement with the theory. So just an illustration, and then the fact that we go to the microscopic level and we just evidence that this is okay, it works well, okay? So here, for instance, for this omega, which is in transition, okay, between a strong intra-valley already sit in, but it's still smaller than inter-valley, but it's smaller than intra-valley. Then you see that you have this behavior that is a crossover between weak localization to weak anti-localization. Then the field is tuning the relative strengths of one respect to another. And then if omega is equal to 1, when I'm completely suppressed inter-valley, according to the other paper, then I cannot. I have some kind of a negative magneto conductance, but it's impossible to fit with the theory. Actually, the theory that I will show, this is I don't have the formula, but okay. Let's say that this dashed line is a fit with the theory, so we can extract some typical elastic scattering length scale that actually determine the ratio between intervalle and intervalle, and here it's impossible to fit. Basically, because also weak anti-localization does not apply, because we don't, our mean free path is on the order of the system length. So it's a kind of quasi-ballistic regime. Let's say that Klein tunneling has been activated somehow, and then it's impossible to localize, even weak anti-localize. Okay. Now, let me come back to this issue. And the question is, can we quantify what's going on in this experiment, and what is the origin of this behavior? It is a question. In order to answer the question, we have to go deep into the defects. And we cannot make just an answer about it's perturbating some type banding model. So to do that, I have to make the ab initio calculation properly. We have to look what's going on locally to the defect. And then we have to extract a type banding model. So we have a way in order to see if we need to have a first order, second order, etc. And we can check that our model is correct by this fitting of this first principle bound structure, and this is a type banding model. And when we get the type banding model, we do all our real space calculation. So by increasing the density of this epoxy defect, then, for instance, we see same story as in the Anderson case. We degrade this runoff, but then we have additional feature because there is also electron hole asymmetry that resonant state that enter into play. What is important is, and this is my question, my contribution to the debate somehow, does Boltzmann conductivity capture direct point physics? As far as I see, this has been debated too. If I'm doing this approximation, okay, I will call this Drudstar conductivity, okay, which is a usual approximation that some people do to look especially close to the direct point. Assuming that this density of state is almost unchanged, then what you get is this result. Because this you can compute quite exactly, and you use this formula, and then the Drug sigma is a function of gate voltage, you use some typical conversion. So this Drug formula will tell you that the conductivity decays as it should with the Fermi-Gödel rule, inversely proportional to the defect density. But close to the Dirac point, the conductivity will increase a lot. Okay? And it reminds something like that. It reminds the fact that maybe in this approach, because you have the density is going down to zero, the Bloxman conductivity is going down to zero, and the resistivity is going up.
Independently of any other type of phenomenon.
Yeah, using density of Lean system.
Yeah,
but it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Exactly. This is the answer. But I'm just trying to show what you get when you make this approximation, which actually I agree doesn't make sense. But this is an issue because by screening out the electron-hole paddle, what's going on at Dirac point is a question now. It's a debated question. So that issue. What do we get here? Look at that. This experiment was done. There is weak density of oxygen atoms, with very weak density. But this weak density is enough to produce a huge effect as a function of temperature. Actually, this is at 100 K, okay? And this is at 70 K. This is the same value. This is essentially the same value. And then when you decrease the temperature, then you have an increase of the resistivity. I don't have the resistivity scale like that, but we could try to compare with that. Okay. But the problem, if you use a Bloch-Boltzmann approach, is that your conductivity goes to zero, which is not correct. Basically, because if you do things correctly for the semi-classical calculation, you have to do it self-consistently with Born approximations, things like that. And then you get a minimum value. It's impossible to go below. And all-numerics actually show that. This is all-numerics. We get this semi-classical when it saturates. And this is this purple curve at 4%. It doesn't go below. And I can increase it. It will never go below. So this is an exact result, which is checked with a fully quantum computational approach. It will not go below. So this is basically wrong. What it would go below because of localization effect, okay? And actually, localization effect are very strong. Even at 100 K, we cannot say if they are negligible. But at 70 K, at 20 K, if there is some disorder, even if it's small density, this contribution would be high. Okay, and this we show. This is all calculation for different value of disorder. Okay, and actually, if in this case we have sufficiently low disorder so that we can capture the logarithm dependence of the conductivity versus length, this is a weak localization scaling behavior. And here we have more stronger disorder, and the system size is already in a strong Anderson regime, and then we get an exponential decay. And we can extract the exponential length, and we can compare the exponential length with the Saulus relationship, and everything fits quite well. And so we can also then discuss and compare with the experiment. This is the variable branch opening estimation, and we can give a number, and this number is in the order of 2%, 2-3%, assuming that this defect will be randomly distributed. There will be no patches or something like that.
This is a size function of what on this lower plot?
What?
This lower plot. So what is on the
lower plot? This was gate voltage.
Oh, it's just gate voltage. Okay, so it's around Dirac.
Yeah, one Dirac point. So one Dirac point, all our calculations that somehow are all self-consistent because they provide first an logarithmic decay and then an exponential decay, and then also the extract localization length completely agrees with the generalized Thouless relationship, gives a typical value of defect density to get this about 10 nanometers, which is in the order of 2%. So we give a number. Now, I'd like to turn to this attempt to go to amorphous graphene. You have maybe seen this beautiful paper where they irradiate this graphene on top of this TEM experiment, and they see that in time, because of the irradiation, you're knocking out, you don't knock out electrons, but you create defect, and the system rearranges, and at the end of the day, you have something that looks very much like an amorphous sp2 structure. And there have been a publication here by these people that claim that actually the amorphousness will bring the system more conductive. So it will be a good thing for application. We predict a transition to metallicity when a sufficient amount of disorder is inducing graphene. And such behavior is a desired property to realize transparent electrodes suitable for touchscreen device. And actually, in their methodology, in their paper, what they get is just to have an increase of the dose because of amorphousness. But their transport measurements is questionable because they get an increase of the conductivity by increasing the density of state. And the story is more complicated. So if you want to go to this study of amorphous, we have to deal with this this defect, this structural defect. This is another illustration of what I've been talking about. We have investigated all these defects that actually turn out to be quite stable, the deep vacancies or stone wheel defect, topological defect. We do the same, first principle, type banding. Here, type banding must be quite more complex because you cannot capture with just the first nearest neighbors. You have to go to second and third nearest neighbors type banding in order to capture and to really fit the first principle density of state. When you do that.
Sorry, in the previous calculations, you didn't have to consider second nearest neighbors?
No. Depends, yeah. The previous it was not. So what we can do is we can show the fingerprint of each defect that you will see with the STM. Actually, it was just published a few days ago by the group in Madrid. They showed the vacancy, and so they have the resonance of the vacancy. So you can the signature of the defect. And of course, in the real system, you will have a random distribution of defect and so forth. So we did the same, and I will not insist in that. I mean, the same machinery and just like. One interesting thing is that we can compute the mobility, and we can adjust the type of defect, mixing defects, changing density, and we get a number. Maybe for some type of imbalance of defect, you get some electron hole asymmetry because resonance states will take place in the hole or the electron part. But this is just to illustrate. And we get the same story if you look at the semi-classical conductivity. It will never go below this 4 e squared over pi h because it's just forbidden. One interesting feature here is that actually because of the resonance states, and this is a case of only having 1% of Stonewall defect in the large graphene, and these Stonewalls create this resonance state. And look at the diffusion coefficient at different energy, which are here marked with arrows. If I am far from the resonance state, I have something that looks like diffusive, almost absence of localization. I'm getting close, then I'm getting bad. I'm on resonance, then I have a strong effect of localization. So this is just an illustration that in graphene, when you start to put more chemistry and you induce this quasi-bond state and things like that, the physics can change strongly by very few change in the position of the Fermi level. And this is something that to date has not been completely, people have not used this, for instance, to engineer some device. But let's come back to this amorphous and the fact that these people predict that amorphous graphene would be good for application. We did the same. We did all we could do. We studied completely disorder, the maximally disorder situation by collaborating with Mike Torp. We did also something where we introduce this defect and making molecular dynamics, and then we create huge patches of defects and things like that. Yes?
Is this material flat?
It's flat, yeah. Geometrically constrained. It's geometrically constrained, and here we can have out of plane modes, but the contribution is it is not relevant to what I would say anyway. So what we get in all the case, which is quite expected, the density of states is very different from the starting graphene, and you have indeed an increase of the dose. But in all case, if we look at the mobility, we will have many orders of magnitude lower. We'll expect that. And we have many localization effects. So we cannot conclude that amorphous is a way to make graphene transport property better. Now let's come to the last part of the talk, where I will discuss about a curious connection between the existence of local magnetic ordering and a peculiar absence of insulating phase. This is a debated issue, really debated in the literature. I just take just like three different cases here. This is made by this group, by Barbaros and people in Singapore. They say that by a very partial and controlled hydrogenation of the graphene, they can observe room temperature ferromagnetic states. Do not comment. This is another paper of Irina, which also showed that by inducing defects, something like that, you can have local magnetic moment, but no magnetic ordering, which is two different things. Magnetic ordering means they start to speak to each other, and they get let's say, ordered. And this is the only experiment. Oh, there is another one by Kawakami, but this is the one I'm showing here, which they have magnetic electrodes, they have a graphene, a transport, and they see some magnetoresistance effect by switching on the magnetic field. And they say that, okay, this magnetization reversal and this type of behavior should indicate that there is some localized magnetic moment. So it's a transport experiment that somehow it's complementary with the IRINA study just before. They have no idea about the origin of the defects of the disorder. What has to be reminded is that there is a fantastic theorem by Lieb, which applies to all bipartite lattices, which is when you take into account correlation, okay, actually, if you have a bipartite lattice and if you break the symmetry, the ground state will be a ferromagnet. And actually, the magnetic moment can be simply related to the imbalance between one side of one nature with respect to another side. This was a mathematical theorem put by Lieb in the late 89. And there have been many confirmations with ab initio, with things like that. This is one of the things we have been doing on graphene nanomesh. We have shown that indeed, if you make the vacancies in the graphene and quite large, you can induce some magnetism, and this magnetism is robust or up to room temperature,
based on the Lieb theorem
and other things. So what we want to investigate here is hydrogenated graphene, the low coverage density, and we use this we deal with a Coulomb interaction by the Hubbard model in the mean field approximation. Okay, so there is a kind of nonsense about the initial occupancy of the spin up and spin down, and then we have a self-consistent loop in order to extract a converged on-site energy for spin down and spin up, which are interacting in the mean field. And now what we like to do is to see if there is a transport signature of a typical case of local magnetic ordering. And we have three different cases. First case, this hydrogen defect that create local magnetic moment will not speak to each other. They will not interact because there are too few. And let's say the interaction is it's very long range. It does not bring any magnetism. Okay, so we are in a situation like that. The second case is that they start to interact, and there is local antiferromagnetism. In order to induce that, we have to put two hydrogen, this is a supercell, in the same supercell. And depending on the distance, the strength of the interaction will be tuned. But we can have locally spin up and spin down, which are
completely ground state
property. And the last situation is if we enforce that these two hydrogen impurity on the supercell sit in the same sublattice, so A and A or A and B. In this condition, the ground state is a ferromagnet and all the spin are aligned on the hydrogen. So they are three different cases. And what we do, if we just now create a huge system and we make a patchwork of one of these situations, for instance. Okay. So it's constrained, but okay, it's just to say, we assume that there is, for some reason, this impurity sit that way. There is a local antiferromagnetic. What's going on? So we use the same techniques. We compute the conductivity versus energy for varying density, for spin up and spin down field, and we find the conductivity in the case of antiferromagnetic local ordering is exactly similar. In the case where we have ferromagnetic ordering, then we have a spin splitting here, and the spin up and spin down for this density are just shifted. So now one of the things we did first is say, okay, imagine that we start with a ground state which is antiferromagnetic. What we can do is we apply a magnetic field and then we turn all this impurity in the same direction. So this will be an excited state, but this is possible. So what we can do is compute the resistance of the system in the ground state and the resistance of the system in the excited state, and we get a number for the magnetoresistance, which is used by this formula, standard formula. And this is what we get. Depending on this density of hydrogen, we can have a sizable magnetoresistance signal. That will tell us that indeed you have local antiferromagnetic that is tunable by a magnetic field. But now, let's look what's going on in the localization regime, which means that maybe we have an increased density or we look at longer time scale.
Just if you go to the previous slide, I mean, do you understand the features?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you have like maximum, true maximum, is it something which is...
No.
View?
This is something that we... Yeah, I no really physical... We'll have to look at the density of states and the behavior of the conductivity, and we have this somehow because of spin splitting. We have some feature that's emerged from the calculation, okay. And depending on the sizing of the splitting, we have different position. It's not really actually far from the Dirac points. I mean, we can question the validity of that far from the Dirac point because we should introduce screening that we completely. And then this is not really taken into account in the calculation. We have a value U which is converged, but is taking the same for all the energy, which, okay, might be questionable to some extent. So now let's go to the quantum regime. Here it's the situation where I have local antiferromagnetism and I have localization effect. And again, this diffusion coefficient show that there is localization. What's going on? The conductivity, again, the same. The semi-classical, it will never go below this value. Okay, this is just because the dot is too large. But then if you have localization, then it goes to zero. And this is somehow, in Manchester, they had also tuned a bit with hydrogen exposure, and they found this transition to localization. So something, okay, something that we already had with epoxy defect, with oxygen, there is nothing new. Now, what is new is that if I'm enforcing all the hydrogen to sit on A sublattice, or B, they are distributed at random. The system is very large, millions of atoms, and we make average, but they have to sit only on one of the sublattices. And this is a diffusion coefficient for different energy. We get a saturation, we get a change, but we navigate the decay, never. So somehow we suppress all the possibility to have a localization effect, weak localization or weak anti-localization. And the conductivity remains pin at the semi-classical value, which is a bit strange. But somehow, this is a strange configuration that why this impurity should sit in only one of the sublattices. But there is a connection between the existence of local ferromagnetism and the absence of localization down to zero temperature. So in this connection, we can completely rationalize, okay, there is one sublattice that is free to survive and exist and could be invisible to the disorder, but beyond that, we couldn't really rationalize that in a more rigorous way somehow. Okay, I think I'm done. I would like to stop here, okay, because we say we have to keep on time. So thank you for your attention. My co-workers.
Questions?
Maybe later. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm still with the ferromagnetism. I mean, I almost had an impression that you have magnetization on the edges.
Yes.
I mean, if you have, but in your calculus, we don't have edges.
No.
So
is it? No, but the magnetism is enforced by the AB symmetry breaking.
All right, this I got.
But yeah.
But you are removing hydrogen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for hydrogen, it's equivalent. We can actually just put a vacancy. It's exactly equivalent. Mono vacancy.
If you would have edges, would it be just two? Let's do separate
combinations,
right? I mean, they would not treat it.
Yeah, but
it's not that like those magnetic moments would go to the edges.
No. They are fixed. They are really distributed in a random way, but always close enough to have a local antiferromagnetism. Okay, and but then everything is random. It's like a small patches of hydrogen that generate either local antiferromagnetism or local ferromagnetism, because we check this at the first principle level and we enforce that in the disorder system. So it's a situation, there are millions of different situation if we put this at random. We don't know. Maybe only if there is ripple or something like that, maybe chemical reactivity will constrain the functionalization of one hydrogen if there is already one. I don't know. But we just try to discriminate between, I mean, first to see if there is a possible way to measure the existence of local magnetism. And our calculation seems to say, yeah, a few percent, it's not that much. But actually, in the experiment of the other guy, it was the same few percent of the magnetic resistance. And the second, which is more like even more hypothetical and more strange, and we give no really interpretation, but here we have complete suppression of interference effect. We have scattering, we have mean free pass, and we have the conductivity that will saturate some value. I don't really like that because the value is 4 squared over pi h. I don't like a conductivity to saturate at 1 over pi. But we have also seen the ballistic regime. We have seen this experiment of Gini Law that they have a convergence to 4 squared over pi h in the case of purely ballistic system. So why not? But this will be completely uncommon because there is no localization at zero temperature. But there will be no localization, and this no absence of localization will be related to the ferromagnetism. And since there are some reports of ferromagnetism, so people can try to measure this transport the same. This is a message.
No, that is
thank you very much.